This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long running things behind the scenes at 520. Tavon Sadler, Coach Boog from Nicholls State. Men's basketball coach will be on with us to break down the Sweet 16 and also talk a little bit about Colonel basketball. And at 5:40, Mark Etheridge from D1 Baseball talking about the big series coming up, starting actually Thursday with LSU playing Mississippi State and also looking across the landscape in the Southeast Conference. Charlie, let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Jonathan and Marrera. Jonathan, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, guys. I just had one point about the Saints, and I felt like the only strength of the team we had going for us was the defensive backfield, and I know y'all said it's probably one of the best the Saints ever had, but now that we lost, you know, our two biggest stars, you know, in the offseason, I mean, to me, it just seems like it's just another position that we need to address. I mean, I don't think we're solid at any position now, so how do you start a rebuild process when, you know, you really don't have any position that you're comfortable with?
Yeah, Jonathan, I agree with you, and it's an area where they got a lot of holes to fill, and they've brought in chip players, so to speak. Now, Justin Reed's a starter, certainly at the safety position. At corner's interesting, and one guy I'm really shocked, he has not signed with anybody, Asante Samuel Jr. Mm. I would have thought by now he would have signed with someone. I don't know if it's asking price at this stage, but man, he would be somebody I'd have a lot of interest in, because I know Asante Samuel Jr. can play, and he's really good. I know he went out early in the season last year with an injury for the Chargers, but I think it is an area where you got to kind of Noah's Ark this come draft time. You got to have two. You got to pick a corner, and you got to pick a safety.
I think safety is maybe even more pressing, Mike. I know that you did go out and get Justin Reed, but you do need the heir apparent to Tyrann Mathieu. He's not getting any younger. As far as the cornerback room, I am really, really interested to see how the new coaching staff views Alante Taylor. Is he a nickel, or is he an outside corner?
I think they're going to put him outside.
So then the Isaac Yiadom thing becomes interesting, too. Where does Kool-Aid play? Does he play outside as well? So those are your two outside corners. Do you play Yiadom in the nickel? Or do you go and draft like a versatile defensive back like Jahdae Barron from Texas? You know what I mean? Like, so it's going to be...
You better pick him in round one.
No, I know. Absolutely.
He's not going to last real long. And he has... Man, Barron, he has played all across the board. He's played outside corner. Yeah. He's played in the slot. He's played free safety. I don't know if he's played strong, but he's played every other spot. He's played left and right corner. He's played in the slot, and he's played at the free safety position. But, again, I think you – I'll use that term, Noah's Ark. You got to pick a safety. You got to pick a corner.
Yeah, the Thorpe Award winner with Jahdae Barron. You know, listen, if you pick him, you're probably going to have to do it at nine. I don't even know how if you could trade back and still have him there, because I imagine that, you know, Will Johnson may potentially be of interest for a team like the 49ers as well. But if you're looking at San Francisco, they desperately need corner with Tre'Davious Ward leaving. So I think they would be interested in him at 11. A couple teams in the teens would be interested in him as well. So you can't move back far. I'm like, I remember in your mock you had Denver taking him. And it makes a ton of sense as far as Sean Payton looking for the joker player, so to speak, that can play multiple spots. Jahdae Barron can do that defensively. So it's not just, you know, you're looking for a guy that can do multiple things on offense. Hey, maybe you can find one defensively too, and Jahdae Barron's that. So we'll have to see what the Saints really think of their cornerback room. Because if you do have, you know, right now you have Kool-Aid, you have Alante, and you have Isaac Yiadom. And if they play all three of them at the same time, we'll have to see how they all kind of fit together. But also, if you want to draft a corner early, it wouldn't be the worst idea in the world, because Marshawn Lattimore still leaves a pretty big void.
Yeah, and if you have an injury, then all of that you can throw to the wind. But you're right about the safety position. They need to bring in a young guy, because you know this is we're seeing the winter years here with Tyrann Mathieu, and you know, one of the greatest LSU football players ever, and certainly had a tremendous NFL career, but it ends for all of us one time and another, and I do think it's a spot where they're going to have to use two picks on, one at corner and one at the safety spot. When we come back, Coach Boog, Tavon Sadler, the Nicholls State men's basketball head coach, will join us, breaking down the Sweet 16, also maybe a little talk about the Southland, and Will Wade's not there, so maybe he can win the conference title this year. I'm going to needle him on that. We'll be back with Coach Sadler right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long running things behind the scenes. And on our Oakwood Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, the Nicholls State men's head basketball coach, Tavon Sadler. Coach Boog, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you for having me, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Coach. Before we get into some of this Sweet 16 talk, last week early we had Coach Will Wade on. He was still at McNeese at that time. And so, man, I asked him about you. And he said, Mike, I would say that Coach Sadler's a good young coach, but I'd be kind of downgrading it by saying young coach. He's just a good coach. And he said, man, they caught us in Thibodeau, and you guys pulled the win out against the Cowboys. But, man, he's made such a big impact in the Southland Conference. But he was really complimentary of you. And, man, I think about the coaches in my lifetime at Nicholls State, Don Landry and Ricky Broussard and the guy you know real well, Richie Riley, and Austin Clunch. They didn't win back-to-back 20-win seasons, and you were able to get them. So I haven't had a chance to talk to you since, but congratulations. That's a great accomplishment at Nicholls. You coming in the youngest coach in college basketball at 28 years old. Not that you're old now. You're just 30 years old. Man, I got shoes 30 years old.
Yeah, man, I appreciate that. I appreciate the compliment. I can't get back-to-back 20 wins without my staff and without the players making big-time shots and making big-time plays and staying connected. So, obviously, the 20 wins go on my record, but without those guys, it's impossible to get 20 wins. So, very thankful for them and the program.
So, Will told me this to tell you. He said, listen, I'm not there no more, so Book can take care of things in the Southland. How about that?
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be nice. That's the goal.
I know that's your goal all the time, to win at this time of the year. Recruiting for Nicholls State is different than, say, an LSU or an Ole Miss or some of the other teams. And so, but you've concentrated on players. You've brought in a lot of new guys to the program and using the portal. And will you continue to do that? I know you still look at the high school ranks, but the portal has really opened up the avenue for you to get better and quicker.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the portal's been really good to us. I think the portal's a little too much right now, but obviously we'll go back to the portal. It's really good, especially with the kids that we had. I thought me and my staff, we did a great job of one evaluating talent who may have been overlooked, or a couple guys who average 2 to 3 points and they come with us and we put in the player development time and they jump up to 12 to 14 points a game. But the transfer portal is definitely where we look to stay. I'm looking to have another big flash in the transfer portal this offseason, but I'm obviously mixing it in with some high school kids this year.
Coach, I know where you were before you hit Nichols State, so how about the Maryland Terrapins?
Yeah. 2025 national champion. Wouldn't you agree?
Okay, I'm going to let you go on record for that. But man, and you had a part in kind of piecing all this together, but you don't seem surprised that, you know, they went this far in tournament.
It's hard to say because I still think they haven't played their best basketball, you know, so I don't want to mark them out on the Sweet 16. I think they got a good enough team to win the whole thing. Obviously, that's a lot of pressure. I'm not trying to put no pressure on Coach Willard. Just saying what I see with my eye. I think with the Derrick Queen, I think he ended up being a top five draft pick. You got Julian Reese over there, and then he did a good job in the transfer portal to bringing that trio of guards. They actually call themselves the Crab Five. That's their new nickname. That Crab Five is pretty good. That's a special group.
Coach, I was going to ask you, but I guess you kind of answered the question. The one seeds this year are fantastic with Auburn and Duke and Houston and Florida. But my question was going to be which of those one seeds could potentially lose in the Sweet 16 before the Elite Eight. I guess you kind of answered
it. Yeah, he answered that
question. Florida versus Maryland. But I guess is there any other one seeds that you can kind of see losing in this upcoming matchup? I know that obviously Auburn plays Michigan, and then on the opposite side, you have Houston playing Purdue, and then Duke playing Arizona, and the kind of spice there with Caleb Love against Duke. It's going to be pretty fun there, too. But what do you think about these one seeds ahead of the Sweet 16?
Man, you know, I don't want to be that guy, but I think once you reach the Sweet 16, all the seeding goes out. Those are 16 well-coached, really, really, really good teams. I'm looking at the bracket right now. I would say, man, Houston's a tough out. Duke's a tough out. I'm going with Florida, you know. Maybe Auburn. I think Tom Izzo has something up his sleeve. I would say even Auburn or Florida, but I don't want to say that in a disrespectful way. It's 16 qualified teams with 16 different teams who will win it. It's hard to look at seeding just this time of the year. The kids want it so much, you know they're going to leave it all out there on the court.
And then the top left bracket, Coach. I just can't wait for the potential Elite Eight matchups. We could potentially see Michigan State versus Michigan if both of those two teams win, or Auburn versus Ole Miss. And you know me saying this, we're going to see chalk, and it's going to be Michigan State versus Auburn. But even then, that's a good matchup. So, you know, those four teams, it's really exciting up there.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Michigan State played each other in the Elite Eight, I think that's special because it's a rivalry. But then on the other hand, if Ole Miss play Auburn, I think that's also special. I mean, one of the biggest things I've noticed, I think the SEC got 7 teams in, the Sweet 16, and I want to say the Big Ten got 6 maybe. And so I could be wrong, don't quote me on that, but having those number of teams from one conference, I think it just speaks about the volume of basketball that they were able to play between January and March. I think those teams did a heck of a job of iron sharpening iron, and I'll go on record to say it, the rich stays rich.
Yeah, you look at Kentucky and Arkansas, and you grew up watching Coach Calipari.
It's a win-win, Coach.
Man, to think that guy in that quick span of time and what he's done with that Razorback program. Boog, I'm telling you, people question his coaching. They ain't questioning it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's the beautiful part. That's the beautiful part of today's day and age. You could literally flip your roster in 10 days. And when I say 10 days, I mean from the transfer portal open yesterday, you could have 13 new guys 10 days from today, you know? So being able to flip your roster, it kind of turns into JUCO. Being able to flip your roster and being able to pay the kids is going to have more first-year programs winning than it will losing, you know?
Yeah, it felt like a win-win-win, doesn't it, Coach, with BYU, you know, getting a new coach with Coach Young. Their old coach, Coach Pope, goes to Kentucky. They're both in the Sweet 16 right off the bat. Coach Cal in Arkansas. All three programs, excellent success in year one under new head coaches.
Yeah, and three excellent coaches. They have all three of those have really, really good infrastructures. I know Kentucky and Arkansas is one of the best infrastructures in the country for college basketball. And BYU has a ton of money. He's a great coach coming from the NBA. I know all three fan bases are happy. You know, I know Kentucky was a little nervous just because Arkansas made it to the Sweet 16 earlier in the day than Kentucky played. So I think Kentucky was a little on edge. Kentucky, you know, that's one of the craziest fan bases in the country along with Maryland. Kentucky fans, they want Mark Pope to go further than John Calipari, and that won't just be for this year. That's for the rest of his career.
Yeah, for life. You know, it's like the NWO for life, so to speak, with that deal. When you look at Duke, man, Coach Boog, I don't see any flaws in them, and they too deep across the board. That team, you talk about a blue blood who's loaded, it is Duke, and they would have to kind of help you if they lose a game. Turnovers, just not being hot that night, but boy, they look like the chalk of everything right now, Duke.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I actually got to watch Duke in person this weekend. I watched Duke versus Mount St. Mary. My younger brother, he's a graduate assistant for Chris Jans at Mississippi State. And so Mississippi State and Baylor, it was hosted in Raleigh. And then Duke and Mount St. Mary had the second game. I mean, like you said, they're flawless. They don't really have a weakness. My favorite part about they're so unselfish and everyone shares the ball. You know, it's rarely a time that they're turning it over. They're lower turnover percentage. But also, they take really good first shots. You know, like they don't do a great job offensive rebounding. I like what Shire does. He focuses on making the shot, and I'm similar in the same way. My team isn't great on offensive rebounding, but we're good at our shot percentage.
Coach, you mentioned that once you get to the Sweet 16, seeding doesn't matter anymore, and they're all good teams. But you know, this year, who's kind of the snake in the grass that's going a little bit undetected? Not many people are talking about them that you think can make it to the Elite Eight and potentially the Final Four.
I mean, I think BYU, to be honest. I think the Alabama-BYU game, that's two high-power offensive teams. You could be looking at a game in the low 90s, high 90s, you know. I know Alabama wants to score. I know BYU's on the West Coast. So I don't think they get as much media coverage as teams on the East Coast do, but that coach does a really good job. He runs really, really good offensive sets. You know Nate Oates is going to want to push the pace. But people don't really know about BYU. They push the pace just as fast as Alabama. So I'm expecting a high tempo, high pace, very exciting game. I think BYU's that one team that people aren't really talking about that could kind of sneak into that Elite Eight. I'm also a huge fan of Texas Tech. Styles make fights. I'm interested to see that Texas Tech-Arkansas game. Texas Tech really wants to guard you and be physical. Arkansas really wants to get out and run and use the athleticism. My two will be Texas Tech and BYU.
Coach Boog, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Hey, listen, when all this is settled next week, we'll get you back on to talk, man, because Final Four time. And, man, everybody's watching basketball, and today it's so easy to gamble. Man, they got people that got a casual interest in it, so to speak, but they got money interest in it. You did a great job today, man. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll try to get you back on next week.
I need one favor.
You got it.
Let me hear you say, go Terps.
Go Terps.
Man, Florida's my pick, Coach. I can't do it.
No, he can't do it, but I can.
I got Florida beating Duke in the national championship game. I can't let it happen.
No, Coach Sadler, listen, I need to get you back.
Anytime y'all want me to jump back on, just let me know, and I'll be excited to get back on.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you, Coach. Tavon Sadler, Coach Boog, man, he does a great job. 30 years old. Man, he ain't going to stay at Nichols long. I mean, some school's going to catch him real quick, and boy, they're going to have a star coach. And I agree with Will Wade. He just is not a good young coach.
He's a good coach.
We'll be back with Mark Etheridge from D1 Baseball right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
Survivor 48 is here, and after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long running things behind the scenes on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line from D1Baseball.com, covers the SEC, Mark Etheridge. Mark, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Absolutely. Let's talk some ball.
Mark, they won't let me get back to Lafourche Parish, so I got to say this first. But last night, how about Nicholls State upsetting Southern Miss? Brent Herring, man, takes over, and some big moccasins there. Mike Silva did a great job for him. Now he's at Arkansas State. But, man, for the Colonels, and you talk about a total changeover roster-wise, and then they beat, you know, what Southern Miss was 13th ranked, I think, at that time. So, man, congratulations to the Colonels. I'll get you for you to comment on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is a big win because Southern Miss is playing really, really well. I mean, they've been one of the teams at the top of the Sun Belt. You know, you look at Troy, you look at Southern Miss, Coastal Carolina. Those are really the three teams at the top of that league, and they've been good in midweek. I mean, they've split games with Mississippi State, Ole Miss. I mean, we've ranked them for a reason. So, for Nicholls to go to Biloxi and get that win, I mean, that's a huge win for the program.
Mark, last week Charlie and I were talking about this as LSU was playing Texas, and man, listen, we know how good Texas is, and I know one thing: I know that manager there; he knows what he's doing. Man, that cat, he is one of the best skippers around. And so after game one, man, I got 4 or 5 texts. Messages, man, y'all overhyping Texas. Texas ain't that good. I didn't get no more text messages after games 2 and 3. But, man, your thoughts on that series? Because for the Tigers, the pitching let them down, but also their defense was horrible. I mean, hey, it was one drop after another, and they just couldn't piece it together. And for Texas, man, I do know that cat that's coaching there, and they're going to be right there at the end when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I was there for the Friday game, the first game of that series, and boy, Cade Anderson was so good that day, man. And then following him up, the Wofford transfer, really, Cowan, it was really just baffled him with a changeup. He just, Texas had no answer. So at that point, you're thinking, all right, you know, LSU may have a chance to make some hay this weekend. And boy, Texas came out in game two, got a good start, but really their offense is just clicking. You know, Jim Schlossnagel was the coach at Texas. You know, he was at TCU and then he was at A&M the last few years. And he's developed a reputation as a hitting coach who is really disciplined. They take a lot of pitches. They don't swing at balls out of the zone. They make you get them out. And that's what he's doing with Texas. He's taking a team that was really, I won't say undisciplined, but not nearly what they are today, and has just transformed them into an offense that really makes pitchers throw strikes. And LSU just wasn't able to miss enough bats in the zone, and that was the reason they lost that series. So I think the other thing to think about with LSU is that was the first road series. And Texas, it was their first SEC home series. They were really fired up for that, had a great crowd. Playing in that environment will only help LSU going forward. And I feel like there's a lot of players on that LSU team, newcomers, who have not played in anything like that, or if they've been there, they weren't the key guy. They were the role player, and I feel like that just going through that is going to help them going forward. Is there's plenty other tough road trips awaiting the Tigers.
I think we kind of had to talk some people down a little bit, Mark, on Monday specifically, where it's just like, if you're talking about the toughest road matchup that LSU has this year on their schedule. Yes, they go to Norman. They play OU, who's a top 10 ranked team. Yes, they play Auburn later on in the season, a top 15 ranked team. But going to Austin, as you mentioned, in Texas's first home series of SEC play against what is right now the number 7 team in the country, it's probably the toughest it will get for this Tigers team all season long. And they were still, game two, the pitching kind of fell off the map. I wanted to ask you specifically about, you know, game three and kind of projecting into the weekend. LSU's offense, we talked with you about this last week, Mark, has been fantastic all season long. And we saw something in that game three against Texas that we haven't seen all season, where they had way more strikeouts than they had walks. And credit Texas's pitching staff, they bounced back last night against the Cajuns, though. Like, you saw a lot more of what you saw from all season long from this offense. So heading into the weekend series against Mississippi State, are you confident that LSU's bats kind of bounce back a little bit at Alec Box Stadium and have a good showing against the Bulldogs?
Yeah, I think Sunday was a lot more about Ruger Riojas and Dylan Volantis for Texas. Those are two really challenging pitchers to deal with. They're just different. And LSU just, they didn't have an answer for them. So you're not going to face those guys on every Sunday. And you may see some Friday. And I saw Mississippi State on Saturday. They were in Norman when I was up there. And they were, the thing about Mississippi State is they have a lot of really good arms and high velocity, good stuff. The question for them has just been, do they throw enough strikes? And also, do they play good enough defense? They kicked it around so bad when I was there. They committed five errors. They had four errors with no outs in the second that led to five unearned runs. And obviously, you're not going to win any games when you do that. And I feel like, you know, for Mississippi State, who started 1-5, it's a big series for them. They can't go down to Baton Rouge and get swept. So I think you're going to see a much more focused, performance from Mississippi State as they go to LSU. Again, LSU catching a team kind of a bad time, but maybe you could say the same thing of Mississippi State catching an LSU team that's kind of licking their wounds after going to Texas and it not working out.
Your thoughts on the progress we've seen from Jared Jones as a hitter, and we saw it last year. He was either home run or strikeout. He's become much more selective now, got much, much better, sort of eyeing up the baseball, and he hit a grand slam last night in the first inning. I wasn't sure if it was going over the fence or through the fence. I mean, man, you just heard that pop of that bat,
right?
And that guy has got some unreal power, but he's really made progress overall as a hitter.
Yeah, I mean, the ball jumps off his bat, but you know, it's done that for, you know, really since he got to LSU. The difference with him is plate discipline. He understands the zone a lot better, and he'll go the other way. Friday night when I was there, he came up in a situation where runners on base, and they were just pitching him away, and he took a pitch low and away and took it the other way for a two RBI hit. And that's he would have tried to pull that, and certainly his first year, maybe even last year. And I mentioned that to Jay after the game, and Jay said, yeah, this is not the same player that we all saw in the past. He has matured and evolved as a player, and now, I mean, guys, he's one of the best hitters in the sport right now. I mean, he's really making himself some money from a pro draft standpoint, and he's one, like I said, I mean, he's got a chance to be like an SEC player of the year type.
And then also, I mean, talking about on the mound, Cade Anderson is going to be pitching. They actually just released the pitching matchups. Pico Cone, who I believe is the reigning SEC Pitcher of the Week, is not going to be pitching that game one. He's going to be pitching on game two against Anthony Ianson. But LSU throwing Cade Anderson, who's been fantastic this season, 2.65 ERA, 56 strikeouts and 34 innings pitched, and a 5-0 record. Your thoughts on Cade entering this weekend series? And it just feels like LSU, yes, there's plenty of excellent aces in the SEC, but LSU's got their very own with Cade Anderson.
Yeah, I saw him Friday night. He was just masterful. He really dominated a really good Texas lineup, as you saw the rest of the weekend. They had no answer for him. The difference for me, seeing him last year and seeing him this year, one, he's physically bigger. Two, his velocity is better. But I think the third piece is just confidence. He just kind of understands how to pitch now. And where last year was more of a learning, it's your first year in college ball. There's a learning curve. And I feel like that he has developed into that guy, right? He's got the confidence. He's got the stuff. And he's one of the best pitchers in the country, and certainly LSU's going to have at least an even shot every Friday night out, and they're going to have the advantage most nights. And I saw what you saw. Mississippi State's throwing Evan Sieri, who's been more of a midweek or a weekend reliever kind of guy, and although he's pitched better lately, I do think it's sort of maybe a little bit of gamesmanship to try to put your best starters later in the weekend against two LSU starters who didn't throw as well, and just sort of, okay, we probably aren't going to beat Anderson anyway, so let's try to game this a little bit and have some success later in the weekend.
Mark, it's unreal because every weekend there seems to be the big series handling out in the SEC. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon, man. Always enjoy your insights and breaking down the SEC for us.
Absolutely, guys. Anytime.
Thanks, Mark.
Mark Etheridge does a great job covering the SEC for D1Baseball.com. When we come back, we'll finish it off here in hour number two of Sports Talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTellier along with Charlie Long. I got one of the texters asked me, Mike, do you think the Saints will make the playoffs this year? I'm going to give you a quick answer. No. I don't think they're making the playoffs this year. But yesterday, once I got off the air, and we talked about this throughout the show, paying wide receivers, Stephon Diggs got a 3-year, $69 million contract, 26 guaranteed, that averages out at $23 million a year. He's 31 years old, and he's coming off an ACL tear that happened, I think, in week 8.
He's
kind of
over the hill, too, Mike.
Man, you
healthy.
Just think, but that price is not going down.
I know.
So people are, Chris Olave, you know, if he's healthy, he ain't worth 25 to 28 million. You watch.
He's going to get paid.
He's going to get paid. We'll be back with more Sports Talk right after this news break.